of the Constitution, the Federalists, and so forth on the right, all of this pretty much obsolete now, as we live in a very different state. And it gets curiouser and curiouser with the NSA's and outweighing the Constitution's means, and the last nail pounded into democracy's coffin. America seems poised at the fulcrum, about to become a very different animal. And just a heads up, all of this, and I do mean all of it, traced back to the USA Patriot Act, which no one believed would still be in force, and it is. And most people, not only have they forgotten that it shouldn't even exist right now, but don't know that it exists. They continue their lives under this vast shadow. But Maryland's legislators would like to outlaw the boycotts against Israel, boycotts that are rising all around the world on all sides in the face of the 21st century's most egregious example of apartheid. One great voice against apartheid rises above the cackle, and that is, of course, the voice of Bishop Desmond Tutu. The news coming out of occupied Palestine continues to shake the walls of silence that the world is hunched behind. There's more, but we have Steve Horn and a very interesting situation with fracking. Good morning, Steve. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good to be back. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. So this is a story that somehow has either been ignored or flown beneath the radar. Can you talk a little bit about your recent investigation into the wild blue, as it were?
So first of all, there's a big premise that this whole debate over gas exports has really not been covered all that much, even compared to things like surveillance or lots of NSA stuff, but and other issues. I think that this has fallen under the radar, even though this is the future of the world as we know it, with climate change and ecological disasters. And so this debate has been pretty robust in Congress in 2014 so far, so about a quarter into the year. And I don't think most people even realize there is a robust debate going on, but there is. And behind it is this massive PR machine, this new group that was formed to accompany it in February, called Our Energy Moment, which kind of sounds benign, kind of weird. Maybe what the hell is that would be most people's first reaction. But to find out what it is, it took a little bit of work. Right? So what I did was went to their website and first noticed, okay, so the industry funds it. Lots of people who would benefit from gas that's extracted from fracking being exported to the global market, companies like Cheniere or Louisiana Oil and Gas Association, among others. So it's obviously it's an industry-sponsored effort, but kind of even more interestingly than that, it's something that the industry does all the time. Behind that curtain was this PR firm that I discovered in looking at their press releases. Often for these front groups like Our Energy Moment, they don't really put the contact on their press releases, so it just is these press releases that have boilerplate statements. This one at the bottom, at the very bottom of it, actually had a contact information, which I think they made a mistake on. Probably in retrospect they realized that, but it sort of had this woman that I found. Her email address was at blueenginemedia.com, and this woman, her last name is Edwards. She used to work for the Department of Energy, actually, as a deputy press secretary. I thought she was actually the relative of Donna Edwards. Actually, her name is Tiffany Edwards, and she's not related to Representative Donna Edwards in Maryland. But she, as a former deputy press secretary, was actually overseeing things around, I don't know if it was her job in particular, but the Department of Energy oversees decisions on gas exports. So she was doing public relations for that same agency. And so she's now on the file, just hired actually in February. Her first duty at this Blue Engine Media is to do things around gas exports on behalf of this industry-funded Our Energy Moment campaign. And
I love the name, Our Energy Moment, of course. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and so Blue Engine, even more importantly, is very well connected to President Obama and the Obama administration. Several people on their staff used to work for his campaign in 2012 and 2008. The guy who runs the firm, his name is Eric Smith, who, and kind of funny, but not really that funny. On his Twitter, he actually describes himself as a quote-unquote recovering political hack and aspiring corporate hack. he was a senior advisor for advertising and message development for Obama's 2008 and 2012 presidential campaigns. Well, now his PR firm is overseeing efforts on gas exports. So, and that's a decision that obviously the presidency in office is the Obama presidency, which his administration, the Department of Energy, along with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, are the two agencies that have the final say on what happens with exports. So we're talking about a firm that's well connected to the president, not just through Eric Smith, but also through the woman who used to be the deputy press secretary for the Department of Energy. And they're overseeing the file, the PR file for gas exports on behalf of the industry, which says all kinds of troubling things about our quote-unquote democracy.
Yeah, it does indeed. And it makes one question at what direction the actual power, the impetus was flowing. Is this the fact that Blue Engine seems so embedded in the Obama administration? Did the Obama administration invite Blue Engine in, or did Blue Engine make a move? Where did the impetus come from? What direction?
Yeah, well, that's the more, I think that some would say that maybe this is a PR effort attached from the Obama administration. It's just these opportunists who left the administration are now on their own as sort of these sellouts. Some would say these people sold out, but in actuality, they're not sellouts, because what was happening is Blue Engine actually ran this other PR campaign during Obama's first term called the Common Purpose Project. They actually owned that PR file. They were paid $1.3 million for it between 2009 and 2012, I discovered through looking at Internal Revenue Service's tax forms, the 990 forms that they have to file every year as a nonprofit. So this Common Purpose Project was actually the coming together of the Obama White House and these various nonprofit organizations such as MoveOn.org, Media Matters for America, several others, the Center for American Progress, and they were actually convening together to talk about, quote-unquote, common purpose. How can they work together to advance the Obama agenda? And, in this case, the Obama agenda is drill, baby, drill, and fracking, so they're not going to challenge that as this quote-unquote common purpose collective of nonprofit groups. And so Blue Engine was putting out the PR for them, and was the main, if you look at the 990 forms, they're the main ones getting the money to help with the PR efforts. And that makes sense, given that Eric Smith was such a senior person for PR and advertising for the Obama campaign in 2008. So it was the Obama campaign continuing during the first term. And so now during the second term, it's not a purpose project anymore. I don't think that exists, although many of those groups still continue to do the same thing and don't really challenge the Obama administration to actually serve it. But the point is that it kind of makes sense that there's this revolving door between the Obama administration and this sort of corporate
revolving
world.
It's kind of spiraling.
It's not exactly revolving. Yeah, something. I mean, it works together.
It's extraordinary. Yeah, this is an amazing piece. I had to go through it a couple times to follow the storyline. We're out of time right now. If you could just give our listeners a link where they can read up on this and stay current, because it is fascinating and we need to know this.
Absolutely. So the article was shortly titled Our Energy Moment, the Blue Engine Behind Fracked Gas Exports PR Blitz. So, it's up on, it's the first article right now, still up on desmogblog.com. If you just go to the main homepage of the website.
Thank you so much for that. We've been speaking with Steve Horn back on the KBOO Airways. We're so glad to welcome you back. Thanks very, very much for that. Thanks so much for your intrepid investigative reporting, too. Something that most people in this business is really beyond curious or incurious. This has been Aircast Katie for Friday, April 4th, 2014. Sam Parrish, engineer of the show today. Thanks so much, Sam. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, we'll take a close look at the bitter medicine the IMF is about to force down the throats of everyday Ukrainians, and take another look at the neo-Nazi influences in the post-coup leadership, and we'll feature our weekly broadcast of the Electronic Intifada podcast, hosted by Nora Barros-Friedman. I'm Dennis Bernstein, all this straight out on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and we turn our attention back to what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on with Russia and the United States, NATO, the European Union, and, well, what it really means, this new leadership in the Ukraine for the Ukrainians. Joining us again is Robert Perry. He is the founder of ConsortiumNews.com. He's an award-winning reporter, Polk award-winning reporter, broke many of the Iran-Contra stories for the Associated Press and Newsweek in the 1980s. Bob, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thanks, Dennis. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to have you with us. Now, first of all, in your lead here, you refer to the coup government. And before we jump into this again, because they're really, this is not something, a word or a phrase or, a concept that is used in the U.S. corporate press now. People do not refer to this as a coup government. So I know this is not hyperbole, but please state why you use that word.
Well, because this government came to power through a violent act against the elected president of Ukraine. And this is not to defend President Yanukovych. He certainly was a very flawed leader and involved with corruption and might very well deserve to have been voted out of office or even impeached. But that's not what happened. What happened is there was he actually agreed on February 21st to a deal with European governments, essentially ensuring it that he would move up elections so that he could be voted out of office. He surrendered some of his power. And he agreed to pull the police back from confrontations with demonstrators. And that was the opening that some of these neo-Nazi militias then used to storm the government buildings. Yanukovych had to flee for his life. The procedures then used by the what was left of the parliament, and much of it was being intimidated at that point by these stormtroopers, these self-styled stormtroopers who were wandering around controlling these buildings. They did not follow the procedure to impeach a president legally. They did it in a very rump fashion, very irregular fashion. And so it was a coup government. It wasn't. The United States immediately recognized it as legitimate, and so did the European Union, but that doesn't make it legitimate, not by the Constitution of Ukraine. Ironically, the United States has insisted in other circumstances that the Constitution of Ukraine is inviolate, especially when it came to the referendum in Crimea, where 90-some percent of the people have voted to leave, secede from Ukraine. But in that case, the U.S. government said, well, they didn't follow the proper procedures. But neither did they follow the proper procedures in getting rid of Yanukovych. So that's why it's a coup regime. It came to power illegitimately through violence.
All right. We're speaking with Robert Perry, and we're talking about the Ukraine and two pieces that you've done recently for Consortium News that I think are really important to think about. Now, talk a little bit about what you're saying in your piece that just came out. I guess it was yesterday in terms of the IMF's bitter medicine. There is a lot of celebration, but it appears that the folks in the Ukraine are in for quite a ride, a difficult ride when it comes to the economy.
Well, there was a reason why Yanukovych rejected the idea of going, getting into a closer association with the EU. And the reason was that the IMF was going to impose very strict austerity on Ukraine as a price for providing financial support and assistance to keep Ukraine afloat. So what happened is that after the coup that removed Yanukovych, this rump government, which I guess the United States and the EU considers legitimate, the interim government, some people call it, went ahead then and struck a deal with the IMF that was pretty much the same one that Yanukovych had rejected. This new government has no electoral legitimacy. There wasn't any new election at the national level to pick a new president or pick a new parliament. They just went ahead and pushed and agreed to this deal with the IMF that takes on a certain amount of loan responsibilities. The IMF approved something like up to 18 million in loan guarantees, but the price was that there'd have to be the kind of cutbacks in social programs, in public spending, and other austerity moves that the IMF sort of in a cookie cutter way often applies to countries that are in trouble. So and that also includes very steep reductions or eliminations of subsidies for heating, which is one of the main points in the IMF's report, that those had to be removed. So you're going to be faced with, if you're a Ukrainian, a very difficult time. The expectation is that there will be another recession. Ukraine has barely come out of the last one from 2008-2009. Their economy has been just going along with about 0% growth. And now they're expecting, some people say 3% contraction. Some say that it could be as bad as 10% or more. So the people of Ukraine are in for some very rough times, and there's going to be very little help coming from these loan guarantees for them. The IMF is concerned about macroeconomic reforms.